We will go ahead and call to order the March 17th meeting of the Finance and Facilities Subcommittee. Good afternoon, members. Cheryl, please call the roll to get us started.
Chair Yarborough?
Here.
Representatives Beltran? Benjamin?
Here.
Botana?
Here.
Bisada Cabrera? Caruso? Chaney?
Here.
Duran?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Kanchovsky?
Here.
Joseph? Mello?
Here.
Mooney?
Here.
Morales?
Present.
Parsons Mulica? Sabatini?
Here.
Tant?
Yes, present.
Williamson?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. Members, make sure you turn off or put your cell phones or electronic devices on silent, and we will move right into our agenda. We have three bills up today. Today we're going to hear House Bill 485, which is personal care attendance by Rep. Garrison, House Bill 1009, organ donation and transplantation by Chair Latvala, and House Bill 1401, applied behavior analysis services by Chair Placencia. First, we will take up House Bill 1009 by Chair Latvala. Chairman, good afternoon, and you're recognized to explain your bill, sir.
Thank you very much.
Try it again.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to explain the amendment?
Go ahead and explain the bill, Chair, and then we'll tee the amendment up.
All righty. The bill requires ACA to include minimum volume standards for organ transplants and neonatal intensive care services, and their role regulating minimum standards for healthcare facilities requires education to the public on state and federal law relating to the organ donation transplant process to the current public education program administered by ACA, prohibits a transplant facility from charging the donor or his or her family any fees for services related to the procurement or donation of his or her organs, and requires individuals who make requests to living donors, patients, or family members for a descendant's organs to explain the protocols of the hospital and federal and state regulations regarding organ donation. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Latvala, having explained the bill, and Chair, forgive me that with a strike call, I should have just had you go to that first, but we'll go ahead and do that now. So thank you, though, for the explanation of the main of the filed bill. The one amendment we have is barcode should we go to questions first or go to the strike? Okay. Hold that thought 1 second. Members, let's go ahead to questions because Chair Latvala has explained the bill, and then we'll go to the strike call. If there's no questions, we'll move to that, but just wanted to give the opportunity if anybody has any. Okay. So having said that, now, Chairman, barcode 447227 is the amendment, and you're recognized to explain it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The amendment removes four provisions from the bill. It addresses a single subject concern regarding neonatal intensive care program volume requirements. It removes a proposed prohibition on pre-existing condition exclusions and insurance policies. The amendment removes provisions related to Medicaid, since the Medicaid program already provides complete organ transplantation-related benefits. And finally, it removes the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission-related portions of the bill to address a drafting issue, a possible fiscal impact, and possibly remove a stop from this four-stop bill. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman, for the explanation. And members, you do have the blue sheet in front of you that highlights what Chair Latvala has just explained in his amendment. We're now open to questions on the amendment. Members, questions on the strike call amendment? Okay, seeing none. Without objection, we will show that amendment. That we don't have any public testimony on the amendment, so any debate on the amendment? My apologies. Any debate? Okay, seeing none. We will show that amendment adopted without objection. We are now back on the bill as amended and open for public testimony. We have a few appearance cards that were put in. First is Ron Watson. Is Mr. Watson here? I don't see Mr. Watson. He is a proponent of the bill. And then we also had cards from Robert Reynolds, waves in support with Fresenius Medical Care North America, and also Robert Reynolds with More Transplants, More Life PC. And then Jan Gorey, waving in support. She's with Tampa General Hospital. And Ron Watson represents the Florida Renal Coalition. And that completes the four cards that were turned in for public testimony. Members, we're now in debate. Debate on the amended bill. Any debate? Any debate? Okay, seeing none. Chairman, you recognize to close on your bill.
I just wanted to thank your wonderful policy chief, Eric Lloyd, for his help on this bill, and particularly the amendment, as well as your assistance. And with that, I close.
Thank you. Chairman Latvala, having closed on the bill, Cheryl, please call the roll and announce the vote.
Representatives Beltran? Benjamin?
Yes.
Rotana?
Yes.
Lucetta Caprera? Caruso? Chaney?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Hentofsky?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Persons Milica? Sabatini?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Williamson?
Yes.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Cheryl. By your action, we will show House Bill 1009 reported favorably as amended. Thank you. Appreciate it, Chairman. Next, we will have House Bill 485 related to personal care attendance by Rep. Garrison. Rep. Garrison, good afternoon. You are recognized to present your bill.
Good afternoon, Chairman. Thank you, members. Florida has long faced a shortage of nursing assistants in our long-term care facilities. COVID-19 took that staffing challenge and made it a public health crisis. In March of last year, ACA used its emergency authority to authorize a new class of temporary nursing home employees to use on-the-job training and apprenticeship to ultimately qualify as certified nursing assistants, who are also referred to as CNAs. These employees who utilize the apprenticeship pathway are referred to as personal care attendants, also called PCAs, and they have been a godsend for Florida's nursing homes during the pandemic. HB 485 would codify the existing PCA program into law and allow nursing homes to continue to recruit, train, and retain quality CNAs who are unwilling to or unable to complete a traditional classroom-based training program, but for whom the PCA option provides a pathway to employment. Mr. Chair, that is the bill, and there is an amendment.
Thank you, Rep. Garrison, for explaining the bill. Members, any questions on the bill as presented? Questions on the bill? Okay, seeing none, as you mentioned, Rep. Garrison, we do have an amendment. It's barcode number 733313, and you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Following up with our professional staff, ACA, patient advocates, other stakeholders, the amendment makes the following changes. It would bring the bill in line with federal requirements related to specific training hours, curriculum requirements, competency evaluation guidelines. It would double the required minimum PCA training hours from 8 to 16. It would clarify that PCAs cannot form tasks requiring clinical assessment, interpretation, or judgment. It would prohibit PCAs from hopping from facility to facility, and it would clarify ACA's rulemaking authority. Mr. Chair, that is the amendment.
Thank you. Rep. Garrison, having explained the amendment, members, we're open for any questions on the amendment. Questions? Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Rep. Garrison.
Good afternoon.
So I took a look at the amendment, and I appreciate all of the changes you made. One question I have has to do with construction in terms of may versus shall. And I can talk to you about it more afterward because I'm just getting to it now.
Sure.
But at lines 36 through 41, you talk about how ACA may adopt the rules that were included with the changed amendment. For example, the 8-hour versus 16-hour requirement, which I know is something is your intent to do. I would just encourage you, or I guess my question is, would you be open to making that shall as opposed to may adopt rules to incorporate the specific changes you have? Because sometimes what we've seen in the past with certain agencies, we'll have the may language and what you're trying to do, but then they never actually adopt the rules. So what we'll have is this emergency program operating how it's operating now without the changes that you're putting in the amendment.
Sure.
Rep, you're recognized.
Certainly, ranking member, we'll certainly talk with professional staff and make sure from a statutory construction standpoint it meets the intended purpose. I will just say for the amendment, we have specifically stated out in black letter law the provisions we've talked about, specifically the 8 to 16 hours and the other changes. So I don't think there's going to be any misinterpretation or confusion about what we're requiring, but I'll absolutely check up on that.
Thank you. Thank you, ranking member. Any additional questions on the amendment? Representative Tant, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you. I have been hearing lots about this bill the last couple of days, and I wondered if you had this information. So when a PCA goes in and gets this training for this job and then decides to go become licensed or take the exam for the CNA, Once they change from PCA and get the and meet that standard for CNA, do they get paid the CNA wage?
Yes.
You're recognized.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yes, they do.
Thank you. And follow up?
Go ahead.
So I want to follow up on Rep. Joseph's question about requiring the agency to adopt rules versus giving them the leeway to adopt rules. And so I want to continue to work with you on that as the bill progresses. So, I mean, I want it to be really clear that there's going to be a delineation here to address some of the issues of the folks who've contacted me.
Okay. Rep., you're recognized.
Yeah, we'll absolutely work with
Thank you.
On that. No problem at all.
Thank you. Additional questions on the amendment? Any additional questions? Okay. Go ahead. Rep. Duran, you're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. So I kind of understand, obviously, a CNA through agency rule outlines what exactly a CNA can, the kind of services a CNA can provide. I guess what we're also saying is that the agency will also be outlining sort of the parameters of what a PCA would be providing, correct?
You're recognized.
There are specific rules that in this statute would require that the PCAs cannot take any sort of action that would require clinical judgment of any kind. There are some specific things that CNAs are allowed to do that PCAs would not be allowed to do, specifically two-person transfers, feeding, things of that nature. But yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Additional questions on the amendment? Additional questions. Okay, seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Rep. Benjamin? Okay, go ahead. Thank you. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Garrison, for the bill. I did have one kind of question with regards to the distinction between the duties of a CNA and a LPN.
You're recognized.
If you know.
I'm sorry, what's the question, Representative?
What's the difference in the duties that they can perform, a CNA versus an LPN?
You're recognized.
Well, a certified nursing assistant is just that. It's an assistant. So they're not allowed to do actions that would require that sort of clinical training that a registered nurse would have. The registered nurse ultimately is responsible for all sorts of clinical action that takes place on the floor. The nursing assistants are just that. They are there to assist, not to do the work.
Follow up? You're recognized.
The LPN. Not the RN, the LPN.
You're recognized.
I'm afraid I don't understand your question.
Rep, for clarification?
Yes. I wasn't inquiring as to the difference between a CNA and an RN. Mm-hmm. I was asking what's the difference in duties for a CNA and a LPN.
You're recognized.
I'll have to get up with you offline on that. Specifically, the certified nursing assistants, again, it all comes down to that clinical judgment. The nursing assistants are there to assist with the day-to-day work necessary to actually make it work for the residents of the facility. So, like I talked about, transfers, feeding, things of those natures. These are the folks on the front lines doing that work that's necessary, separate and apart from the clinical work, to make sure that residents have the quality care.
Thank you. Ranking Member Joseph, an additional question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this one is one that you and I had spoken about, and I just want it on the record because I've gotten quite a few calls about it and feedback. So one of the concerns that I had expressed was making the 2.5-hour requirement apply to people participating in this program as opposed to the CNA training program. And correct me if I'm wrong, and add whatever you'd like to it with the question, is there are basically three paths to become a CNA. One would be to just go and take the test. You don't do any coursework, you think you've got it, you can figure it out, you go take the test and you're in. The other option that exists right now, outside of this emergency program that you're expanding, is that they take the training course, they pay for the training course and work at the same time. And then your program. So would you break that down so people understand why you're pushing back on the 2.5 and the parity that you're trying to create and the stigma you're trying to avoid with the program?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Ranking Member, for the question. And I'll give you a little bit of a longer explanation because I think it does provide some context. Currently, as we sit here today, if you want to be a certified nursing assistant in the state of Florida, you have three ways to do it. You can walk in off the street and take the qualifying exam as described in page one of the staff report. You can do that. Most people don't do that. They want to get trained before they take that test. Option number two is you can enroll in a 120-hour course that would train you to prepare for that examination. It's a combination of classroom and practical, about 80-40, that would prepare you to do that. Option number three is you can become a personal care attendant. Those options are available today. And at the end of that four-month period as a personal care attendant, you can sit for the examination just like options one and two. So all three options at the end of the day have to take the same exam to ensure that they're qualified to serve in that position. What this amendment would do is it would take the existing PCA program that's been put into place pursuant to executive order, and it would codify it. And if the amendment is to be adopted, it would put additional restrictions to make sure that if, regardless of whether you're serving as a CNA in training, utilizing the classroom pathway, or a PCA model with the apprenticeship program, you have the same base level criteria before you set foot on the floor. So we're making all those three equal and making sure that regardless of whether you choose the apprenticeship pathway or the classroom pathway, there are the same standards in place and the same opportunities in place. The second part of your question had to do with whether or not those folks who are in the CNA and training pathway or the PCA pathway can count for purposes of staffing. Currently, as we sit here today, if you're a PCA or a CNA in training, once you meet that criteria, that base level criteria, and you're on the floor, you do count for purposes of staffing. We're not looking to change that. What we are looking to do is make sure that those same minimum standards that exist now for CNAs in training before you set foot on the floor would also apply to PCAs. So we're tightening that up a little bit to ensure a higher quality of care.
Thank you. Thank you, Rep. Any additional questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, and we have no public testimony on the amendment. Members, we're now in debate on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Debate. Members wishing to debate. Okay, seeing none, without objection, we will show the amendment adopted. I did want to mention, too, we do have several, and now we're to public testimony now, we do have several individuals who have turned in cards who might be able to speak to some of the questions that have been raised if they're able to. So we'll move down to public testimony. First, we have Deborah Franklin with Florida Healthcare Association. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee, for this very important work that's being done. I'm Deborah Franklin. I'm the Senior Director of Quality Affairs with Florida Healthcare Association. We represent over 560 skilled nursing facilities out of Florida's wonderful 700 facilities. Attracting and retaining frontline caregivers continues to be one of the biggest challenges for the Florida's nursing homes. Certified nursing assistants represent the majority of our caregivers, yet this is one of the hardest positions to fill. The pandemic only made it worse. It was worse prior to the pandemic. It was a crisis prior to the pandemic. Baby boomers are retiring. The pandemic has made it worse. As facilities worked to keep residents safe and meet their care needs, employees were going on quarantine, testing sometimes twice a week, families being sick and having to go on quarantine, are simply folks leaving the profession due to their age, their risk, fear, and stress. In March, the Agency for Healthcare Administration approved the Personal Care Attendant Program to help strengthen our workforce and add more hands to care for the residents. The goal of the program is to give these individuals a pathway to become a certified nursing assistant and ultimately begin a career in long-term care. We've seen nearly 2,000 individuals go through the PCA program. Of those individuals, the individuals that have taken the CNA exam, 85% have passed. Adult learners learn better seeing and doing than reading and hearing. That's a proven teaching fact. An important part of this program is the hands-on training that the PCAs receive. After 16 hours of classroom instruction given by a registered nurse, the PCAs are required to demonstrate that they are competent in each skill. That's making a bed, each skill. Vital signs, every skill they're allowed to do, they have to actually demonstrate competencies before they're allowed to do it. Then they work alongside an experienced CNA to learn by observing and assisting with basic duties like making beds, are taking the vitals, or even getting a glass of water, whatever they can do, you know, part of the CNA care that they're allowed to do because they have showed competencies. The PCA continues the on-the-job training while working with the CNA and supervising nurse until they have gained the knowledge and skills to challenge the CNA exam. Just like nurse aides in training, PCAs must challenge the CNA exam by 4 months of working in the facility. If they are unsuccessful, they have to transition to another indirect care position, such as housekeeping or dietary. They cannot continue to work directly with the residents. Now, they could not work and continue on and take the exam on themselves and then come back, but they can no longer do that as a PCA. The work of a nursing home caregiver is not easy. It requires patience, compassion, and understanding for why our residents who may have understanding that our residents may have no other family, they have may have memory care issues. It takes a special individual, and this program has helped identify those who have that calling to care for the elderly, and it has also shown some that long-term care is not a career for them, and that's okay. CNA school is very costly, ranging $1,000 to $3,000. The PCA is paid directly, paid from day one, from the nursing center, and the provider pays for the exam. The alternative is an individual going through an expensive CNA training school where they only have classroom experience and don't understand the work they'll be doing until sometimes too late. The direct care provided by a CNA is a critical component of quality outcomes. These individuals make the biggest impact on our residents, providing person-centered care, assistance with their activities of daily living, encouragement and support. Sustaining and improving quality of care in our nursing centers depends on a strong workforce, and this program is helping us attract and recruit the frontline workers we need. I would please ask that you vote in favor of this bill in support. And I have over 30 years of director of operations experience. If you have any questions, I...
Ms. Franklin, thank you. We do have a question from the ranking member. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a question too? Okay. So I come from a family full of nurses, from CNAs to LPNs, APRNs. My mom was a DON, used to do inspections for ACA. So, like, this is, like, their wheelhouse. And I've reached out to a couple of the nursing associations and spoken to some of the workers and unions that represent the workers. And so I am such a fan of the premise of the bill, which is addressing the staffing shortage. But I don't understand, one of the things that I need to highlight in this conversation is the need to pay the CNAs better, right? And so part of the reason you have this staffing crisis is because of the benefits and the pay that is there. And some of that we can address in different ways, and I would like to request your assistance in doing that to make sure that we can get there, because I think this is a nice Band-Aid, but it doesn't go to the underlying issue.
Ranking Member, is there a question there?
Yes, the question, that I'm getting there. I'm just teeing it up. Thank you, sorry. So it needs to get to that crux. Have you started to explore additional ways to address the staffing crisis? Because this gets them to getting to a CNA. But once they're there, we're still back to where we started. What things have you started looking at to address that underlying crisis to make sure that we can actually keep these people doing the backbreaking work that they do?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Jordan. Chair, as you know, the majority of our funding is federal and state. So, you know, we have a kind of a fixed reimbursement. I will say Florida does top a lot of the nation. We just pulled some data from Medicaid cost reports, and our CNA average rate in Florida is $1,385. And so we have seen that continue to go up as reimbursement allows for that. You know, the reason we're fixed rate wages. There's a very small percentage of private pay, so we're kind of locked into what we get paid for Medicaid and Medicare to set those expenses.
Thank you. Additional questions? Or we'll move on to further public testimony.
Okay.
Reb Caruso, Vice Chair, did you have a question for Ms. Franklin? Okay, you're recognized. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Franklin, for coming before us. I was just wondering, do you find that the non-certified nursing assistants that take the 4 months, that practice as 4 months, do they have the same success rate passing the exam as those individuals that actually take a course and then take the exam?
You're recognized.
Thank you.
Recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. Every school is different. They all have different pass rates. You may have a really good school that's hands-on and really pouring in to make sure their students pass. And then you may have one that is not as good, and so their pass rate will be lower. So usually as a provider, you learned the schools in the area that you knew had good outcomes.
Follow.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Follow it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you don't know whether in general those individuals that are working the 4 months doing the job, if they have a better success rate than those that take a course?
Are you talking?
Recognized.
Thank you. Are you referencing the current PCA program?
That's yes.
Out of the data we've been following, 152 facilities that have implemented the PCA program, their data that they have given us, 85% that have taken the exam have passed, which is a very high pass rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Ms. Franklin. We appreciate you being with us today. Next, we have Michael Phillips, who's with the Department of Elder Affairs Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate
it. You can pull that microphone down, Mr. Phillips. Thank you.
All right, sorry. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. You know, when the PCA program was initiated, it was for emergency situations to handle staffing issues. Now to make it permanent gives us a great deal of concern. As I'm the state ombudsman, we handle over 5,000 complaints from residents in nursing home facilities every year. The top three are attending to personal hygiene, dignity and respect, and failure to respond to call-out. Now, these are tasks that are done by CNAs primarily, and these are tasks that are done by them with 120 hours of training. And they have to do this within 4 months. Now we're taking a program for a PCA and making it almost the equivalent of a program for a CNA. And we don't really see a need for that because on the statistic that you heard, 85% of those who challenge the exam, not the 2,000 that are in the program, but those who challenge the exam, 85% of those pass. How many challenge the exam? 500. 500 out of 2,000, you're talking about a 20% success rate. Or you can turn that around, an 80% failure rate. Now, you got this revolving door of folks coming in tending to residents with dementia. Very difficult for them to deal with this lack of continuity of care. Individuals who may be going down to sundowners, 8 hours, 16 hours of training, isn't going to prepare the PCA to how to deal with residents with dementia. It'll give them an introduction, surely. But when you're looking at that pass-fail rate, I'm concerned as a former academic vice president, if you did that in a college or university, you'd lose your accreditation when you only passed 20% of your class. It's not a good way to go. I think there's other ways to do this. I'm concerned that it would be dumbing down. It will create, surely will create, a cheaper labor force for the industry, but a less qualified. And we've got serious problems in the nursing homes right now with the quality of care. This is, I believe, a marketplace issue for the facilities to come up with the money. My dad bought a brand new car in 1958 for $3,000. I cannot go into a dealership and intend to buy a new car for $3,000. I got to play with the marketplace. I'm going to have to pay $35,000. And it's a marketplace issue here. The requirement for sufficient staffing is both federal and state law to meet the staffing requirements. Facilities have to come up to it and meet that staffing requirement. What's happening here are residents are suffering for not being changed, having a decubitus, exacerbation of that, having to go through the debriding, whatever, may end up with sepsis and die. All of these are unnecessary if the care is given. So when you have folks out of the 2,000, 1,500 dropped out of the program. When did they decide that they didn't like to do this job anymore? How did that attitude play out while they were doing their job or not doing their job for the 4 months that we've given them? I think this is a dangerous way to go. I don't think that this is increasing the benefits to residents in long-term care facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you.
Wait just one moment. Ranking Member, do you have a question for Mr. Phillips? You're recognized.
Thank you. With your argument, how do you factor in the fact that some people can go and take the CNA exam with no training?
Mr. Phillips, well, you're recognized.
Excuse me, thank you. As a former academician, I have a problem with that. Is the class efficient to produce the end results, or is the exam too easy? I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know the statistics from these different schools. You know, another way to look at it is having skin in the game. If the facilities are willing to forgive debts for CNA training, create a system where the economics are such that if you stay with us for a year, 2 years, we'll forgive part of that debt of the training. That's an incentive to stay on. But we've got to think creatively. I don't think this is a creative thought myself. I think it's trying to fix something that certainly benefits the facilities, but I don't think it'll benefit the residents. We've got a bill up, a bill is up on increasing the training for dementia care. That's done because that's a serious problem, understanding that. I have one of my staff members who has a degree in psychology, specializing in geriatrics. Her first job after college was working in a dementia unit. She said, there's nothing about my college, 4-year degree, that really prepared me to deal with the issues that I had to deal with that first year. I think it's a serious issue, and I think that having folks with less qualifications going into facility is going to increase those numbers. And I told you, those are the three highest, over 5,000 complaints. Those are the three highest areas where we have problems. And this is where residents have problems. I want you to focus on the residents. The need for staffing is in law. It's in statute. They can find a way to do it. They won't be able to buy the $3,000 car.
Mr. Phillips.
They may have to purchase something great.
Thank you. Ranking Member, did that answer your question? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Phillips. We appreciate you being with us today. Our next speaker in public testimony is Shantia Carter. Ms. Carter representing herself as a personal care attendant. Good afternoon, and thank you for making the trip from Jacksonville.
Good morning.
You're recognized.
Good morning. My name is Shantia Carter. I have been working as a personal care attendant with Edgewood Nursing Center in Jacksonville. I'm a proud mom of a 9-month-old baby girl just back there, and I also have two little boys. I made a promise to my children to give them the best life that they deserve. The personal care attendant program is helping me to do just that. Before I came to Edgewood, I was working at a moving company, but I knew that wasn't the place where I could build a career. It was really just a job. As a personal care attendant, I'm learning the skills I need to become a nurse someday, which is a goal of mine. I started off training alongside of nurses and CNAs that has taught me the correct ways to take care of residents. They also taught me how important it is to keep calm, happy, and make them feel safe and loved. I've learned the skills firsthand from the nurses on the floor, and I've gained more self-confidence in my role. I've passed my clinical skills test, and I'm just waiting to take the written part of my exam when I will officially become a certified nursing assistant. I've also learned that working at Edgewood is more than just a job. It's the future to a better career and life for me and my children. It's also a place where I can make a difference in the lives of residents and where I can be part of a team. The PCA is an important program for me because it's for people who need a way to break into the healthcare field, and I hope you all will support in making this program permanent. Please vote yes.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here, Ms.
Thank
Carter.
You.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Tanya Jackson with SEIU 1199 Healthcare Workers. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you having me here today. I'm Tanya Jackson. I represent SEIU 1199, the United Healthcare Workers, who represent about 26,000 workers across healthcare workers here in Florida. I also want to thank Representative Garrison and his staff who have been very open to listening to our concerns. First, we do not oppose this legislation. We have one issue with it, and that is the PCAs being counted in the 2.5 hours of statutorily required direct care. The reason that is because CNAs sign up for a class. They have the classroom. You've heard all this already. Excuse me. This is the first time I've been inside since COVID, so I apologize, my voice. And so they have made a commitment to that training and to that course. And that is CNAs, as you've already heard the testimony, it is back-breaking work. It is the hardest job in healthcare. It is also incredibly emotional work. My personal experience, when my mother passed away, who had been in a nursing home, and we had a very small service for her, the CNAs were the ones that came. They were the ones that were there to comfort me after spending several years comforting my mother and caring for her. We believe that this will impact quality. If you count that in the 2.5 hours, because of the less training. Also, the LPNs and RNs who oversee those CNAs, their license could be at risk if there is some issue there. And so we would ask you to consider, and if I can continue to work with Representative Garrison, to possibly do an amendment where that time is not counted in the 2.5 hours. Workforce issues are huge. We know they're a big problem, and we are committed to working on those issues. If anything, our workers are the ones that are the most impacted by those issues.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. We appreciate you being with us today. Thank you. Next, we have Jessa Collins with Edgewood Nursing Center. Ms. Collins also came to us from Jacksonville today. You're recognized. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you. I'm Jessa Collins. I'm the administrator at Edgewood Nursing Center, where Shantia works. I want to say a couple things that the basic difference between the PCA program and the traditional CNA class program is that we at the facility are able to pay them while they get their education. The other difference that I want to make sure that we're all clear on is that CNAs who complete a class, so they're not CNAs yet, because you don't become a CNA till you take that test, but once they've completed a class that they've paid for, they too count into the 2.5. Okay, so you've got, in both situations, you've got non-certified people counting into the 2.5. They can do that for up to 4 months. After that, they cannot do it. It gives them a period of time to take their test. One of the reasons that's really important is it takes a long time to get your test date. It's not a quick, simple process where you pay the $155, which is what they pay for their test, and then you're immediately given a date. I've had people wait 3 months. So it can take a while for people who complete a class or PCAs working in the facility to get their test taken. So I just wanted to say that going through the pandemic as a nursing home administrator was extremely challenging. I worked as a PCA myself. I took the training and worked on the floor alongside with Shantia and all of my other aides because that's how badly we needed the help. That issue of needing help has not gone away. I would so much rather hire a CNA than a PCA, no offense, Shantia, because it's less time, effort, and energy on my part. They've already got their license. I don't have to train them. I don't have to help them sign up for their test. I don't have to do any of that. But there are not enough CNAs out there. I wish that there were. This is not a payment issue either. I will pay the PCA the same as I will the CNA. They're paid based on their years of experience, similar to a nurse. So if a nurse has had her license for 10 years, she usually falls into the wage scale differently than a nurse that's had her license for 1 year. So we absolutely are in a staffing shortage. And it's not going away. With our population continuing to age, there just are not enough caregivers. So the really and truly, the PCA program ended up being a lifeline. It kept us afloat, and that continues to be a problem currently. I have two open positions on every single one of my shifts, and I'm only a 60-bed facility. There are over 500 job postings for CNAs on Indeed just in my city. So it's very difficult to get the staff that you need. The PCA program, it basically teaches them hands-on, just like many other jobs do. So if you are a mechanic apprentice or a plumber apprentice, you get paid while you're learning to achieve those certifications in your particular field. What I like about the PCA program is that it moves the classroom from a classroom where you're working on anatomical dummies to actually into the facility where you're working with actual people.
Ms. Collins, if you could wrap
your
comments
up. That Sorry. Can be it.
Okay. No, thank you. We very good information. We just need to move along. Ranking Member Joseph, you have a question for Ms. Collins?
Yes. I just want to make sure I understood which was which. At the beginning, you said you can pay one but not the other. Which one can you pay and which one can you not pay while they're training?
You're recognized.
So the PCA program, you pay the person while they're getting their training. If a person in the community goes and signs up for a CNA class with Acumen or First Coast CNA or whatever it is, they pay for their class, but they're not getting paid. They may work at night at a restaurant or at Walmart on an off shift, but they go to class 8 hours during the day, not getting paid, and then they still have to work to support their family. Okay. The PCA program, I pay them 8 hours a day while they're learning.
Thank you. All right, thank you, Ms. Collins. We appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. One moment. Rep. Fabricio, you have a question for Ms. Collins?
Thank you, Chair. Just a very quick question. I believe I heard you say that one of the benefits of the PCA program is that it allows to fill a shortfall in staffing that we currently has. Is that not correct?
Yes, sir.
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. No more questions.
You said yes, right? Sorry.
I was yes.
Recognizing you. The answer was yes. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Collins. Next, we have Stephen Kane with Florida Justice Association. Is Mr. Kane here? I don't see Mr. Kane. He is in opposition. Steve Bummer, president of Leading Edge Florida. You recognize? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. When you said Steve, I flinched, but it was the wrong Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. Members of the committee, Steve Bamer, Leading Age Florida. We represent about 250 senior living providers around the state, assisted living, nursing home, and continuing care retirement communities. So a total of about 500 individual buildings statewide. And I want to thank Representative Garrison for bringing the bill. He did an excellent job of making the case. I might just point out a few items. First, this is a program, which we've heard some about already, that was put in place just about a year ago, and it's been very successful, as you've heard, in terms of filling staffing gaps, especially during the pandemic. And while the pandemic conditions are beginning to change, the workforce challenges are not changing. As you've heard, there was a workforce crisis before we dealt with COVID, and the pandemic has only exacerbated that crisis. A recent survey of nursing home operators across the country of issues they expected to face in the post-pandemic era, we expected there would be a number of things in the top five. The number one issue nationwide was the workforce shortage. Our members are simply struggling to find the people they need to provide the care for their residents. Believe me, they would hire CNAs if they could find them. And to the question of pay for CNAs, we have members who have already raised starting wages for CNAs to $15 an hour in advance of the requirement to do so, and they pay PCAs the same amount of money because, of course, the PCAs will be there for 4 months and then sit for the exam. So if we could find them, most assuredly, we would hire them. So this program, the bottom line from our perspective, this program is not about supplanting CNAs. It's about supporting CNAs. It's about providing assistance to clinical staff in an ongoing workforce crisis that shows no signs of abating. And because the work that PCAs do has been done by CNAs and counted toward the hourly staffing requirements, it makes sense that that work would continue to count going forward. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity. We appreciate this good bill, and we hope you'll support it today. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate being here, Steve. Thank you. Kenneth Kniepman with the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. You recognize, be as concise as you can.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I will be very quick.
Thank you.
It's a number I'd just like you to remember for just a moment. 7,497. That's the number of licensed CNA positions that are listed on a single internet job site in the state of Florida right now. There are 7,500 at absolute minimum positions that are available for a CNA to interview for. In the sponsor's hometown, that number is 558. Do we have a crisis? Do we have enough people? We do not have enough people. We don't have enough CNAs. We do need alternative pathways, pathways that make sense for people in this post-pandemic, this pandemic era, where they need to work, they need to support their families while they're trying to figure out how to get from where they are to where they're going. This is a bill that does that, and I ask you to support it today and in its future committee meetings. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us. That concludes our in-person speakers. Members, we do have four other cards that were turned in with their positions. Lynn Hearn, also with the Department of Elder Affairs Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, waived in opposition. Barbara Devane with Florida Now, waived in opposition. Zane Smith with AARP, waiving in opposition. And Brewster Beavis with Associated Industries of Florida, waiving in support. Members, we are now, that concludes public testimony. We're now in debate. Debate on the bill. Any members wishing to debate on the bill? Vice Chair Caruso, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a great bill. It's so badly needed. I think Ms. Chantel, thank her for coming up, and I think you are exactly why we need this bill and what this bill is for. So thank you, Representative, for bringing it forward. I will be way up on this bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Any additional members in debate? Okay, seeing none. Rep. Garrison, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair, thank you. CNAs and PCAs, CNAs in training, no matter what it is, this is tough, thankless, oftentimes backbreaking work that we ask people to do. Caring for our elderly population isn't just a job, it's a moral obligation. And I would ask for your favorable consideration of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Garrison, having closed on the bill, Cheryl, please call the roll for House Bill 485 and announce the vote.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Butana?
Yes.
Buceta Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Antosky?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Booney?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Persons Mullica?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Williamson?
Yes.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Cheryl. By your action, we will show House Bill 485 reported favorably as amended. Thank you, Rep. Garrison.
Thank you, Chair.
Appreciate it. Members, our final bill will be House Bill 1401, Applied Behavior Analysis Services, by Chair Placencia. Chairman, good afternoon. You're recognized to present your bill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much for allowing me to present this bill. HB 1401 does two things. The first thing it does, it exempts all group practices that provide ABA services from the requirements of the Health Care Clinic Act. I'll explain what that means in a second, but let me go to the second component. The second component will allow for an RBT, which is a registered behavior technician, to be able to enter the classroom of a public school district and provide ABA services for children who have been prescribed ABA services for whatever condition that they have. And I want to explain just what that means to those of you who aren't familiar with ABA services. So ABA services is a behavior modification method used for a number of things, specifically for children and adults with some kind of cognitive disability. For myself and for many of my constituents and the people across the state of Florida, we're dealing with children with autism. And so currently what's happening in our school districts are that some school districts are allowing for RBTs to go into the classroom and some school districts are not. The reason that's happening is because there's been changes in how
that care has been provided over the number of years because of changes in the industry itself. When ABA therapy first started, it was primarily done by a board-certified behavior analyst, a BCBA. As we've gone through time over the years, what we've shifted is the BCBA provides the behavior plan or the modification plan, and the RBT who works under the supervision of the BCBA is the one that administers that plan. And that's about 75 to 85% of all the therapy is done by an RBT. So currently, school districts allow for BCBAs to be in the classroom, which is great. The problem is that now BCBAs rarely are the ones that provide the behavior modification therapy. That's the RBT. So what we're finding is that there are a lot of children throughout our state and our various school districts who aren't receiving the therapy needed for them to have any semblance of independence, be successful in their classrooms, depending on where on the spectrum they lie, the autism spectrum. And we're talking about, for some kids, kids who aren't potty trained, who are nonverbal, who act out in what is considered a violent manner. And so it's the behavior modification is what teaches them to act in a way that is more conducive of the environment that they're in. It could be something simple. It could be something complex. But without the ABA therapy, it makes it difficult for that child to be successful throughout the course of their development in their life. And so this is a very important bill to many families that are impacted in our state. We were able to pass the entire bill off the House floor, and a portion of it, of last year's bill, was in a Medicaid package, and a portion of this is just an extension of that, and that is the bill.
Chairman, thank you for explaining the bill. Members, we're now open for any questions on the bill. Questions on the bill? Okay, seeing none, we have no amendments on the bill, so we will move into public testimony. We had two appearance cards. Mary Riordan with Florida Association for Behavior Analysis. Serena? If you could keep the comments concise for us, that'd be great.
Representative Plasencia did a great job, so I have very little to say here, but thank you for listening on this bill. And I want to thank Representative Plasencia for filing the bill. It does two really important things: to make sure that behavior analysis services are available to children and adults who need them. Right now, the healthcare clinic license is getting in the way of many very qualified providers of actually providing services. If you're a Medicaid provider, there's an exemption for you, but not everyone is a Medicaid provider. Some areas of state, you can't even apply because there's a moratorium against becoming a provider. In some parts of the state, there are enough Medicaid providers, but there's needs for other families to get those services, so we really need this approved. If you're a behavior analyst, it's very difficult to get that license. You have to hire a licensed professional to oversee your practice, so you might have to hire a physician to oversee your practice, and they don't really know much about behavior analysis, so it's hard to find someone who's able to do that. For the RBTs, it's just, like the representative said, it's so clear that they are an integral part of providing that services, and without it, we have kids in the schools who are doing dangerous things, not learning the way that they should, and the RBTs are a piece of how that happens, making that happen. And we get emails all the time from families who are frustrated by the lack of access that they have for their RBT can't go into the school. So we'd encourage you to vote yes and support this bill.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Pretzman, also with Florida Association for Behavior Analysis. Thank you, Mr. Pretzman. We appreciate you being here. That concludes our appearance cards. So now we're back on the bill for debate. Members, any members wishing to debate on the bill? Any members for debate? Representative Tant, you're recognized in debate.
I just want to state for the record that my son has received ABA services during different periods of the course of his life. It's the single best thing we've ever done for him, and I strongly support this bill.
Thank you, Representative Tant. Any additional members in debate? Okay, seeing none. Representative Chair Plasencia, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief, especially since sometimes I get emotional when I talk about this. So I just want to thank the chair and staff for working on this with me. And as we move through this process, I'll make sure that I share a little bit more about ABA services and autism. As many of you often, as many of you know, and many of you will soon realize that it isn't until something touches you personally that you truly understand it and you become an advocate for it. And so I want to be able to share that message with as many of you as possible so that we can continue to advocate for those who sometimes don't have a voice, and we are their voice for them. And with that, I close.
Chair Plasencia, thank you. And Chairman, having closed on his bill, Cheryl, please call the roll on House Bill 1401 and announce the vote.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Busada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Taney?
Yes.
Moran?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Hanchovsky?
Yes.
Joseph? Yes. Mello?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Persons Mullica?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Williamson?
Yes.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Cheryl. By your action, House Bill 1401 will be reported. We will show that bill as reported favorably. Thank you, Chairman. Appreciate it. Members, that concludes the items on our agenda for today. Seeing no further business to come before the committee, Representative Busada Cabrera moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting's adjourned.